Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of War Beauty Wednesdays on Jedi Realist Radio, brought to you by Blog Talk Radio. How's it going? Oh man, I am back in the saddle. Let me just make sure you guys can hear me with my tech person. We're perfect. Hey guys, how's it going? How has your week been? Probably pretty shitty. Let's just not even lie. 2020, what the hell? Anyways, that's actually what we're going to talk about, and don't think we're not going to talk about it. I'm being told that I sound a little more forceful, so let me, you know what, no, I want to sound forceful, because this is an important episode for you guys to listen to. I actually am going to go for an hour today, and there's a reason, because there's a lot to say on the matter. And if you're not following current events of the world, I'm about to catch you up real quick. So here we are, 2020, and we are just bouncing along, doing our little 2020 thing. And, you know, you guys know I've been kind of depressed in the coronavirus lately. That's been a thing. Everyone's been depressed in the coronavirus lately, and it sucks, and it has sucked. So to make things even suckier, enter the murder of George Floyd, an unarmed man who, you know, I'm not even going to get to the legalities of the case because there are so many differing opinions out there. Basically, an unarmed man who was killed by an officer in Minneapolis. The good news for everyone watching, that officer, he was arrested and charged. He is being charged currently with second-degree murder, and the other three officers who were at the scene have now also been taken into custody, and they will also be charged. Charges are forthcoming here in, like, whatever, a little bit. So that's a positive win for justice, and, you know, it's about time that we saw that, and I'm glad that we're seeing that. Now, is, you know, day late, a dollar short, absolutely, but it is what it is at this point. They're in custody. So let's talk about this show. I hope I have a whole bunch of new listeners tonight, because the show is incredibly important. This episode, I should say, is incredibly important. But first, I want to tell you why it's so important, because I want you guys to spread this message and adopt this. Years back, when I was thinking of a sort of mission statement for War Beauty, which is me, who I am, and what I stand for, I wanted to think of something easy, something you could potentially make a hashtag, something that stuck with people. So I created the acronym ELIE, E-L-I-E. And ELIE stands for Educate, Liberate, Inspire, and Empower. And I wholeheartedly believe in doing those things. It is my number one mission in life. Education, liberation, inspiration, and empowerment. And so I want you guys to adopt that, because tonight there's going to be some education, hopefully some inspiration, and some empowerment. Now, I'm being told that my mic is cutting in and out a little bit, so let me... No, it's... Okay, I'm basically swallowing my mic at this point. Anyways, those are the important tenets to take away tonight. So let's talk about the current events of the world, keeping in mind that that is the goal. Now, if you guys are listeners of War Beauty Wednesday, or you know me, you know that I don't make this show a political statement. I don't make this show political, as in I don't make it Republican or Democrat. Never have, never will. I literally don't care what side of that fence you sit on. It's irrelevant to me. We're going to discuss opinions and facts, and I'm going to lay them out for you on both sides, typically on both sides. Tonight, it's probably going to seem a little one-sided and biased, and admittedly, it might be a little one-sided and biased. However, I will tell you what is verified source and what is my personal opinion in the matter. I will differentiate for you, because ultimately, I want you guys to be able to make the decisions and choices for yourself. This is education. I want to help you guys educate yourselves so you can liberate yourselves, inspire and empower others. And that's what we need right now in this world. But enough of my jibber jab, enough of my blabbing. Let's talk about the current events. What are we seeing around the world? We are seeing, we are witnessing a lack of accountability on every level. And when I say lack of accountability on every level, I legitimately mean that. And right now you're going to see a lot of discord on social media. Honestly, a lot of you probably participate in the discord on social media because it's frustrating. And you know what you're seeing is wrong, and you're very passionate about it, and I commend that, like, keep that up. But let me start off by saying that the people on the streets, the cops on the streets, the protesters on the streets, this is not where the failure has happened. My opinion, let me cite this, is that the failure happened at much higher levels of leadership. And this, guys, I wholeheartedly believe that this has been systemic for a long time, and this has kind of been a long time coming. This is a couple of different pots that have finally boiled over. And leadership at higher levels has been decaying for a while. And now it is 100% evident what the consequences of that has been. Say what you will about it. It doesn't matter if you are talking about them as Republicans or Democrats. It doesn't matter what party that the elected officials identify with, Republican or Democrat. I'm making a blanket statement telling you that all of our leaders have failed us for the past couple of decades. And that's really sad because now this is happening. And this didn't have to happen. If we had addressed these issues and had accountability in the first place. So what does that mean? Well, that means that, well, we're at the tipping point of the scales and reform is needed. Reform has been needed. There's a whole bunch of needless violence, and it's just that. It's needless violence. There are cops being killed. There are protesters and civilians being killed. That is just the facts. You can say, oh, well, what about this and this life and all the fact is, cops and protesters are being killed. There is a war being staged and waged currently in the streets of some of our major cities and even some smaller cities, which you cannot dispute, no matter how left or right you think you are. What cannot be disputed is that lives are being lost. Innocent people are being hurt, mutilated beyond repair. People are being attacked. Both officials and civilians are being attacked. And there is a massive riot war happening all across our country. That's indisputable. And if you think it is, open your damn eyes. Officials are being attacked by police. Now, this is truly flabbergasting to me. Let me preface this with, I am truly significantly flabbergasted by this. There is the congresswoman from Ohio. Her name is escaping me. I didn't have this particular research prepared because I'm not really going to go in depth about it, but the congresswoman from Ohio, she was tear gassed by police as she joined her constituents in a protest. For those who are not keeping up with a lot of places, actually quite a few House representatives, so state level representatives and congressional level representatives, have actually been out there with their constituents. And they are getting tear gassed. They are identifying themselves and they are being maced, basically, which is, that is fascinating to me. And I want you guys to really understand this. A representative from the state or from the federal government identifies themselves to you, an officer of the law at the street level, and you mace them. You tear gas them. That is literally your boss's 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 boss. That's so many bosses above you. I literally cannot even fathom doing anything but answering their requests for, or their demands rather, for information and for an explanation. I literally can't fathom doing anything but that. That is brave. And to the officers who have done that, you have balls of steel, and no one can say you do not. So, that aside, and I want you guys to know right now, I'm not only going to talk about police violence. We're going to hit police violence first, and we actually will get into the rioting, looting, and civilian violence towards the end, because there is a big piece that I need to tell you guys about in regards to that, and it's pretty heavy and in-depth. But police violence is actually pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. Police is mean. Police is brutal. Police sprays you with whatever. Police fires rubber bullets at you, come what may. That's pretty straightforward, and unfortunately, a lot of it is on camera. So let's go there. For those who are watching, and again, I understand that the media has a really fun way to spin things, and everybody wants to not believe anything that they're seeing because, you know, why would I see it and believe it if you were not there in person? All this nonsense. Whatever. What, even if you don't believe that the police violence that has been enacted of against protesters and against demonstrators, even if you don't believe that it was not instigated by the demonstrators and protesters first, I'm going to give you the benefit of that doubt right now, by the way, to discuss this particular point so you don't think that I am biasing, even though you're going to think that anyways. But I really want to make it clear, I'm not biasing this from a protester standpoint. I'm actually just telling you what the police are doing and the methods. So police instigation and brutality, they're using one of their big techniques that they're using is called kettling. Now, kettling is essentially a tactic and technique where officers surround a group of people and they cut them off at every point, and they funnel them strategic placement to a certain location where that group then finds themselves completely 360 surrounded by law enforcement or impassable objects like buildings. So kettling is one of the biggest techniques that they're using to hurt protesters, both violent and nonviolent. That's what it is. That's what they're doing. If you're at protests and you see this happening to you, I really don't know what to tell you other than your safety is probably in danger. Even if officers do not enact any violence or instigate any sort of violence or aggression towards you, you are still in danger. Because what happens when people get scared and when people get panicked, mob mentality breaks out. All hell breaks loose. You can be trampled. Not by officers. You can be trampled by other protesters. Now, that's not something we hear a whole lot about because injuries from trampling are typically a lot less severe than rubber bullets lodged in your dome piece or your skull. Sorry, dome piece is a military term. Injuries that are still existing out there. And, you know, you may say, oh, well, medics are there, so for heat exhaustion and for, you know, those more extreme injuries. But medics also attend protests for those kinds of injuries, for trampling. People can have limbs broken. People can have fractures, sprains, bruises. People can be crippled from being trampled by scared, panicked crowds. That is kind of what kettling is supposed to do. Other than surround you and trap you like scared animals, it is supposed to rile that fear up, and it's supposed to kind of incite a little bit of that trample mob, because police didn't technically hurt you if fellow protesters did. Keep that in mind if you're attending these protests. Like, don't be fooled by these tactics. These are classic war tactics, classic urban combat tactics. That is what they're doing. Watch out for it. So the next thing that they're employing are things called pepper balls. I've actually never dealt with pepper balls before. So for those who need to know, I served in the United States Marine Corps, and I served only my 4 years, but that was enough for me. But I served honorably nonetheless. And so I have come into contact with substances and with chemicals and biological warfare agents because it's part of military training. Pepper balls is not something I've ever come into contact with, and I've actually never heard of them until the riots now. So I'm not really going to speak too much on those because I don't know a whole lot about them. I'm assuming that they are just concentrated mace, basically. I imagine it is just a like some sort of device that is concentrated pepper spray. If it's not, please feel free to correct me, but just know that it's out there and it's an irritant and it's they're deploying it on people. And mace, they are deploying pepper spray also on everybody. Let's talk about rubber bullets for a second. So rubber bullets are not tiny. They're not little tiny doodles. Okay, so I've been told so pepper balls, I'm sorry. Pepper balls is basically pepper spray in a paintball. So yeah, it's just little balls of mace. Rubber bullets, let's talk about this. So rubber bullets come in a few sizes and most of them are freaking huge. Rubber bullets hurt. Their actual intended firing projection, I guess you could call it, is you're actually supposed to fire them at the ground and use angles to hit your intended target because rubber bullets are intended to slow down and intended to stop whoever you're firing them at, but they are not intended to be fired close range, point blank, or any of the or directly at whoever you are firing them at. That is what we're seeing out in the streets, is that rubber bullets are being fired directly at people instigated by police. Again, if you support police, if you support protesters, if you support both, this is not a commentary on any of that. This is just me telling you that, hey, there are hundreds of videos of police shooting people with rubber bullets, close quarters, and pretty much point blank. There's a lot of damage that is being done by rubber bullets. So if you're attending protests, keep this in mind because rubber bullets are dangerous. Even if you're wearing armor on your body, they will bruise you. So if you are wearing no armor on your body, they can maim and kill you. We have had a few really terrible incidents of civilians who couldn't withstand rubber bullet penetration. There is a horrible incident of a woman who was shot in between the eyes by a sniper with one of the smaller rubber bullets, and it completely dislodged one of her eye sockets. For the most part, it didn't kill her, though, but it will cause pretty significant and substantial damage. A pregnant woman was shot in the stomach directly with a rubber bullet. These are just stories that you guys will see circulating on social media. I'm just reiterating them. But that is the damage rubber bullets can cause. Now, rubber bullets, again, are supposed to be fired at the ground and then bounce at their intended target. That will still do damage, but nowhere near the damage that firing a rubber bullet directly at someone will do from close ranges. Next, we're going to talk about tear gas. Now, I just told you guys I was in the Marine Corps. One of the things that all the military has to do is basically be voluntarily tear gassed. It's called the gas chamber in boot camp, or at least in Marine Corps boot camp. I'll speak from the Marine Corps experience. In the Marine Corps, we call this the tear gas training, basically. We call it gas chamber. And that's exactly what it sounds like. It is a concrete building where you walk in and there's concrete walls, but instead of the World War II idea of a gas chamber where pellets are dropped down from the ceiling, there is a canister inside and the canister is then released inside directly the gas chamber. Now, the purpose of military gas chamber training is to make you understand what this feels like. It is intended for you to feel and experience what tear gas is. And in boot camp, they actually use really, really concentrated and a lot of canisters. So I know everyone has their boot camp stories from the military, like, oh man, you know, you go in and you're in whatever uniform they're making you wear, and you line up against the wall with all the other recruits, and you have these like defunct old training gas masks on, and you have to make sure that you understand how to use a gas mask, because that is a reality of war, is chemical warfare. And so you have to do this whole thing where you go in, you have to break the seal on your gas mask, because a gas mask worn properly, by the way, is sealed, does not enter the mask at all, because tear gas is an irritant. So you have to voluntarily break the seal. Now, whatever you do afterwards, it kind of depends on your drill instructors and who's, you know, doing it at the time. Some people will do jumping jacks. Some people will have to say their full name and social. Some people will have to do both. It just really depends. So they make you inhale this gas and get it into your throat and your lungs, get it into your eyes. Mucus comes out of every orifice in your face, by the way. When you're tear gassed at that level in a gas chamber, it's KO for your sinuses. But whatever was in there will definitely be cleared. So the noise you're hearing in the background is Mike Hannigan. Hey, Mike.
Hey, real quick. I was just thinking about the gas chamber and whatnot. I don't know if that's a fair assessment for what we had to endure, simply because we got the concentrate and we got the enclosed area. Now, I do wonder what the outdoor effect of tear gas would actually feel like.
So I was actually just about to get into that. Now, that is the military boot camp experience with an enclosed area, no escape, barely functional gas mask. Now, for those who are appalled by the fact that the military has to do this training, please understand that's the boot camp version. When you do this training in what we call the fleet in the Marine Corps, which means that you're no longer in training and you're just doing your job as a regular service person, the training is intended to ensure the working order and function of essentially a hazmat suit. We call it MOP gear. And they are these suits that you wear with gas masks that you have to wear in combat if there's a biological agent released, like Agent Orange or tear gas or whatever that is going to go out into the air. So essentially the gas chamber functions that they release a canister of tear gas because it is an irritant, but it's not it's not a deadly irritant. And let me be really clear about this. Tear gas is not a deadly irritant for normal, healthy, average adults, like adults who go into the military. So if you can feel the irritant on your skin, if it gets into your gas mask and you breathe it in, is it going to suck? Absolutely. But it is to ensure that your hazmat suits basically work. Now, the deployment of tear gas against civilians, there's a couple different kinds of tear gas. I'm not going to get into the science of tear gas, but there are a couple different kinds of tear gases that can be deployed. That now, keep in mind, if you are in protest and you are in big wide areas, the chances of you inhaling a super concentrated amount of tear gas to the point where everything is burning and you can't function, it's pretty minimal because the wind already disperses that concentrate. However, it does not mean that you cannot suffer side effects. If you have respiratory and heart problems, if you have coronavirus, if you don't know you have coronavirus, well, you're going to find out. But if you have any sort of distressing problems like asthma, tear gas can be deadly for you. If you have skin issues and you have hypersensitive skins, if you have skin diseases and disorders, this stuff touching you could be a mortality sentence, a death sentence for you. So please keep that in mind if you're going to go out to protest and you have any pre-existing conditions like this, if you have any cardiovascular diseases, if you have skin diseases and disorders. Tear gas is an irritant. while not deadly to the average normal healthy person, can be deadly to someone like that. You could go into an asthmatic fit and you could suffocate and you can die. That is a real thing tear gas can make you do. Now, that was my little tear gas spiel. I want you guys to be educated on tear gas. Now, I personally am a little, I'm not so sympathetic for the use of tear gas, and I know that that's a controversial statement to make, but having experienced it a few times in my life, again, voluntarily via the military, as someone who did not have any health problems and would be someone who was physically fit and healthy enough to attend a protest like that, I will tell you, while it sucks, it is literally not the end of the world for somebody in that condition. So, again, I have a little less sympathy for the use of it, especially if tear gas is being used to disperse violence. If there is a lot of violence happening, it is a way to kind of make that stop, and it is, you guys are going to disagree with this, but it's really not a violent method of crowd control. Is it necessary? I don't think so, but it's not particularly violent. So, let me tell you, there's a video out there. Now, this is the only video I have seen of this, of a police officer who maces a man, and the man clearly doesn't react to the mace. So then he gets shot directly in the face with a tear gas canister. Tear gas canisters, by the way, are hot if you touch them. Please don't do that. You can suffer pretty severe burns from touching them, and that's a big issue. But I saw the video of the man being shot directly in the face by the tear gas canister. That's pretty much deadly. Or it's about as deadly as a rubber bullet, and that's you don't want to get hit with that. So, again, if you're out in protest and tear gas is being deployed, do not pick up the tear gas. Try to get downwind, or upwind, rather. Try to get upwind of the tear gas canister so that you reduce contact with the irritant. Understand that burning is exactly what it's supposed to feel like. It is going to feel like someone poured Szechuan peppercorn sauce all over your skin. Do not touch your eyes, your nose, or your mouth. Do not touch your ears. Do not touch any mucus or orifice on your body until you have washed all of that off. And please keep in mind that tear gas is made of little crystals that stick to things, and heat activates them. So if you have tear gas on your clothes, take them off and do nothing with them. Take them off immediately to be washed, because tear gas crystals stay, and it's kind of like a grossly burny poison ivy feeling, and it's not fun, and you don't want to experience it. Do not touch your face. Don't touch your face because coronavirus, but really don't touch your face if you get tear gas, because tear gas, while again not deadly if it gets into your eyes, nose, or mouth, unless you have existing conditions. If you're a healthy individual, it's still not going to be fun, and you don't want to go through that. Just trust me on this one. So let's the First Amendment. Oh, man, I'm sweating because I only got 30 minutes left. I'm like, there's so much left to cover. All right, let's talk about the First Amendment, guys. What is the First Amendment? Let me literally read you the words of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Let me tell you what this means, because the key words here are the people peaceably to assemble. What is peaceably? Peaceably means inclined or disposed to avoid strife or dissension, not argumentative or hostile. That is what peaceably means. inclined or disposed to avoid strife or dissension, not argumentative or hostile. Now, here is where protesters are peaceably assembling when they are screaming at police officers. And I have been waiting so long to drop this sliver, this nugget of information on everybody and change your life. I don't know how much attention you guys pay to the legal system of the United States of America. I don't know how much attention you guys pay to any of the goings-on of the Supreme Court, of the FBI, any of that. So hopefully this blows your mind. If not, you need to spread this information because it's very important. Everyone who says that protesters who are screaming at cops in their faces are not peaceably protesting, you are actually legally incorrect. And that is, let me draw your attention to the Snyder versus Phelps case heard in the Supreme Court. For those who don't know what Snyder versus Phelps is, let me pull up my thing here. If you go to the uscourts.gov, you can actually look up the facts and case summary of Snyder versus Phelps. Snyder versus Phelps was the Westboro Baptist Church versus Matthew Snyder's father, who... What was that? What are you doing in the background, Mike? You're making a lot of noise.
Oh, I am terribly sorry. I just turned on like 5 of my ceiling fans.
All right.
I thought I had a
anyways,
TV,
back
I apologize.
To Back to Snyder versus Phelps. Snyder versus Phelps, the issue was whether Westboro's signs and comments while picketing Matthew Snyder's funeral related to matters of public concern and were thus entitled to greater protection under the free speech clause of the First Amendment. So when people think the First Amendment, they think that it protects only nice, gentle speech, but the Supreme Court and the Westboro Baptist Church unknowingly did you guys for these protests a huge favor with legal protection. Supreme Court holding, yes. The Supreme Court's holding turned largely on its determination that the church was speaking on matters of public concern as opposed to matters of purely private significance. The court explained that speech deals with matter of public concern when it can be fairly considered as relating to any matter of political, social, or other concern to the community, or when it is a subject of general interest and value and concern to the public. Speech on public issues is entitled to speech protection under the First Amendment because it serves the principle that debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open. So anyone out there who is protesting police violence, that speech is all protected thanks to the Supreme Court. Because if God can hate the gays, you can hate the police. But keep that in mind, it is a two-way street. So essentially, Matthew Snyder's father, so Mr. Snyder was arguing that their picketing, their comments, and their signs outside his son's funeral caused him a great deal of emotional distress, which I am not arguing with, by the way. I do not agree with this court ruling whatsoever. But the fact is the court ruled it, and that it should be considered slander and hate speech. The Supreme Court said, actually, no, it's not. So take that for what you will. Now you know. All right, let's see. Okay, so now that I've talked to you guys about First Amendment, talk about Lafayette Square. And that was the incident the other day, June 1st. That happened in Washington, D.C. So for those who don't know, I actually live right near Washington, D.C., and I am right next to pretty much all this nonsense. Lafayette Square, so that square is a historic square, and it's essentially the church that is right outside the front lawn of the White House. That's where it is. To give you a relation proximity, it's right next to the White House. Lafayette Square has been pretty much almost every day of the year host protests of some sort. Now, this particular one, protests were demonst- protesters were demonstrating and screaming, as is their right, as defended by the Supreme Court. Thank you, Westboro Baptist Church. What happened next? Honestly, I don't think this is a matter of political opinion, but I will let you make that choice for yourself. President Donald Trump gives a speech in the Rose Garden of the White House where he announces that he will be taking a walk to the historic church right across the way at Lafayette Square in order to pay his respects to the building which suffered arson in its basement the previous day due to rioters and protesters. Cool. Great. He decides he's going to walk from the Rose Garden of the White House, basically out the front door, through the front lawn, which that's really weird, by the way. A lot of presidents haven't really done that in modern days. Walk across the street and go to this church, where he then proceeded to do a photo with a Bible. And that's all I'm going to say about that. He did a photo with the Bible, and that's what it was. What happened before the president got to the church was protesters were demonstrating, and there's a whole lot of video about it, and police started moving in on them. And then police started moving in even more. And police started moving even more with riot shields. Now, keep in mind, this is not the D.C. Metro Police that are doing this. This is military police. These are federal-level troops. These are not D.C. troops. And then the crowd, with no warning, with no anything, gets tear gassed. And there are flashbangs that go off. And there are mounted cavalrymen who then move in. And the police begin to kettle these protesters further and further away from the church. There is clergy who was on site, who was administering to people that was tear gassed. And basically shot at in order to clear out of the church so that the president could come and make his little speech and make speech face and do his little photo, right? So first, let me hit on what actually goes on when a president goes anywhere, because this is and I really need you guys to understand this. And so if you're still with me, thank you for listening, and I hope you were learning things. When you work in a government position, most people know you have to have a security clearance. A lot of the military has a basic level security clearance. People who work in higher levels of the government have higher levels of security clearances. Now, there are only technically two levels of security clearance, and please challenge me on that, because I literally did this at the Marine Corps Security Guard Headquarters School, which is the Marines that guard the embassies. I literally did security clearances for them. So you have your secret clearance and your top secret clearance. Those are your two levels of clearance. Everything else that you get is what's called a caveat to that security clearance, which means it is kind of like an extra little tidbit to your security clearance. So in order to be within working arm's distance of the president, you have to have what's called a Yankee White. And Yankee White means you can work near the president safely, like you're a trusted person. It doesn't matter if you are discussing top secret intelligence matters for the deep state or whatever reptilian agenda, whatever they're into these days, or asking him what he wants for lunch because you're his little intern doodle. You have to have a special presidential security clearance to be within arm's reach of the president. Another thing that people don't know is if you guys ever see the presidents, any presidents, wear kind of big, thick, heavy-looking trench coats at all times of the year, that is actually bulletproof. That is the president's kind of body Kevlar to protect him from projectiles. So President Obama wore one. President Trump wears one. The presidents do wear body armor, you guys. And that is the Secret Service's domain, and they take that job very seriously. Now, what happens when a VIP moves, especially a VIP like the President of the United States of America, is there is protocol that has to be followed. Typically, because there is so much security concern regarding somebody like the president, areas are cleared ahead of time. There's typically no other scheduled events. There are typically no Joe Schmo civilians that do not have some level of security clearance. And typically, most people, unless it is specifically a public appearance, if it is a private sort of government buddies only thing, typically everyone has a presidential level security clearance, meaning that they have that Yankee white, meaning that they can be within arm's reach of the president for whatever it is they're doing. This photo op was not a scheduled public appearance for the president. Therefore, the Secret Service did not have to prepare any public removal procedures. There is literally standard, it's called an SOP in the military, there are standard operating procedures in order to have VIPs escorted safely from one place to another when they arrive. Typically, you would inform, like, say, the bishop or the clergy of the church he's attending so that they can prepare, so that they can make sure that there are no protesters and demonstrators at the church before the president gets there. Except he didn't do any of those things. Now, before you jump on me, I will tell you, President Obama actually broke this VIP protocol all the time. He was always in trouble with Secret Service because President Obama would sneak out of the White House at night to go eat at Ben's Chili Bowl and hang out with his constituents, with his public and his people right down the street. So granted, yes, it was not during, you know, potentially violent and upsetting riot times, but that is still a breach of protocol. President Obama did it, like, all the time. President Trump has also done this. Now, this is a particular grievous breach of protocol because protesters were dispersed using very aggressive military tactics when they were protesting legally and they were protesting peaceably. And protesting legally and peaceably, that means that they had a permit to protest. Because something else people don't know is if you want to have a photo shoot in Washington, D.C., if you want to protest in Washington, D.C., if you want to have a mass public gathering of any sort in Washington, D.C., you need to have a permit. And they are freaking expensive, you guys. They are not cheap. But you have to have a permit giving you permission to do those things. Because there are so many VIPs in D.C. at any one time, it is a massive security risk and concern. The president, Secret Service, is not unaware of this. Nobody in D.C. is unaware of any of this. So draw whatever conclusions you want for the Lafayette Square incident. I'm just telling you what actually has to happen and what procedures and policies and legalities were in place when all of this happened. Which brings me to my next point, why I wholeheartedly and firmly am calling pretty much all of Washington, D.C. right now oathbreakers, all of our higher leadership oathbreakers, because they have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution. Now, I do actually have a bit of a caveat to that, and that would be President's oath. So let me pull the president's oath up for you here for a second. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. It wasn't the president's oath. Okay, anyway. So the president's oath says, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will do so to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now, say you're working at, like, the Pentagon. An oath you might take is, I, my name, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office of which I am about to enter, so help me God. The enlisted military oath says, I your name, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will obey the orders of the President and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to the regulations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. There you go. There's your little oath. So violating First Amendment rights of protesters in Lafayette Square, you have broken, clearly broken and violated your oaths to uphold and defend the Constitution as you have violated the First Amendment. Now let's get into that for just 1 second, and I'm going to make this quick because actually there's something that is a little more important to talk about, and it's scary, and I really need to talk about this with you guys. Everyone is upset that the clergy, medics, and journalists are being fired upon. And you should be, because they are literal crimes. Now, everyone cites the Geneva Conventions. So let me tell you what part of the Geneva Conventions you should be reading and citing. Geneva Convention Protocol. So in 1977, Protocols 1 and 2 were added to the Conventions of 1949. Protocol 1 increased protections for civilians, military workers, and journalists during international armed conflicts. It also banned the use of weapons that cause superfluous injury or unnecessary suffering or cause widespread long-term and severe damage to the natural environment. Protocol 2, according to the Red Cross, was established because most victims of armed conflicts since 1949 convention were victims of vicious civil wars. Protocol 2 stated all people not taking up arms be treated humanely, and there should never be an order by anyone in command for no survivors. That's very important wording, because no survivors is a slippery slope. And I hope you guys can draw your conclusions from that. But that is the wording of the Geneva Conventions, and that is what you should be looking at in your outrage as to clergy, medics, and journalists who are being shot at. And before you start saying war crimes, read the Geneva Conventions and actually read them. So,
okay. I have a question for you.
Sure.
All right. The protest, the Washington, D.C. Square that you mentioned. You mentioned that the chief had paperwork and permits, yada, yada, yada. I don't know if they had them or not. But hypothetically speaking, if they did not have them, would there actually be different rules of engagement for breaking that up versus when it had a permit? And the next part to that question would be peacefully assemble, scream, shout, do what you want. Say what you want, excuse me. But let's say you had 100 people, which we're going to use small numbers just because I love small numbers. But if you had 100 people in a protest and 10 of them decided they wanted to act rowdy and start breaking shit, does that turn the whole protest itself into an unlawful assembly? Because people are going to ask those questions, so I figured I'd ask you.
Okay, actually, we're going to get to that here in a minute.
Damn, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. No, it's a good question, and it's what everybody wants to know. But first, let me tell you about military force, and then we'll get into what constitutes lawful and unlawful assembly. So military force and the presence of military troops in cities, can the president do this? Yes. According to the Insurrection Act of 1807, yes, he can. Now, does the military have to obey any of this? Arguable. Article 90 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice actually outlines the crime of willful disobedience by a military member of a superior commissioned officer. Article 91 covers willful disobedience of a non-commissioned or warrant officer, and Article 92 conveys what constitutes the crime of disobedience of any lawful order, and the disobedience does not have to be willful under that article. The article also requires the obedience of lawful orders, Not only should an unlawful order not be obeyed, obeying such an order can result in criminal prosecution. And actually, you can thank the Nazis for this particular little fun thing added in the UCMJ, meaning if you are a soldier and you are ordered to shoot a civilian in the face, that is an unlawful order, and therefore you can refuse it, regardless of if your superiors did not. Anyone at any level can refuse that, and you are protected by Article 90 of the UCMJ. Remember that. And anyone with military friends and family who are active duty, anyone in the National Guard, remember that. Article 90, 91, and 92 of the UCMJ. That is where your saving grace is if you are given unlawful orders, and if you feel that an order is unlawful, meaning it forces you to break your oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Lawful and unlawful protesting. Protesters in Lafayette Square would have had to have had a permit to be there, and they would have had to have had the church's permission. That's a double whammy. So having both of those things means that your protest was lawful. And you can watch all the videos and hear them screaming anything you want. As we discussed earlier, their hate speech is, if that's what you want to define it as, towards the police, absolutely protected by the Constitution. Again, thank you, Westboro Baptist Church. So they were peaceably demonstrating, and it was absolutely a lawful assembly. What makes it unlawful is if they didn't have a permit, in which case they were then rightfully dispersed. Regardless of method, they would have need to have been dispersed, and you could have actually arrested all of them for being there. Is that realistic? Not particularly, but that is something that you can do. But when you have protests of that size, it's typically lawful, and they usually have the permits to back it up, or the church has the permits. So that's something you guys need to think about when you're thinking about Lafayette Square. Now, all right, I only have like 5 minutes to tell you guys about this. And first I'm going to tell you that as a Marine, we talked about oath breakers. And I want you guys to know that General James Mattis, former Secretary of Defense, today has denounced President Trump and described him as a threat to the Constitution. And that is what I'm going to say about that. Please go read his statement. Veterans, please go read his statement. His statement was so important in pertinence to the UCMJ Articles 90, 91, and 92, because a senior leader of the Pentagon and of the Marine Corps, a general, has now come out and said that this is unconstitutional. You are far more protected than you realize, and I hope that you use that protection wisely. So, let's talk about the violence, because here's something that I need you guys to hear. You guys are now going to be seeing reports of the FBI at these protests, and they are asking for information on riot, looting, and violence inciting. You may be wondering why, and everyone is going to come out and say, oh, well, it's because they're trying to get Antifa, because the president said Antifa are terrorists. I'm going to tell you that's actually not what's happening at all. The FBI told us exactly what they were doing last freaking year. So listen well, my friends. I don't care what you think of Antifa. I don't care if you're a member of Antifa. That's literally irrelevant to all of this. Because what's actually happening is the FBI is now investigating police who have been uncovered, undercover police who are inciting riots and violence and looting, and white supremacists. Let's get so political. Okay, listen here, y'all. Let me read you a statement directly from FBI.gov/investigate/terrorism. The current threat. The FBI is committed to remaining agile in its approach to the terrorism threat, which has continued to evolve since September 11th. Years after these attacks, the threat landscape has expanded considerably, and international terrorism remains a serious threat. The threat of domestic terrorism also remains persistent overall, with actors crossing the line from exercising First Amendment protected rights to committing crimes in furtherance of violent agendas. Oh, what's that? First Amendment criers are actually lone wolf terrorists? Oh, okay. So let's see. Okay, FBI, what's another statement you have made about this? FBI.gov news testimony confronting white supremacy. Violent extremists are increasingly using social media for the distribution of propaganda, recruitment, target selection, and incitement to violence. Through the internet, violent extremists around the world have access to our local communities to target and recruit like-minded individuals and spread their message of hate on a global scale. The recent attack at the Chabad of Poway Synagogue in Poway, California, not only highlights the enduring threat of violence posed by domestic terrorists, please note, they call them domestic terrorists, but also demonstrates the danger presented by the propagation of these violent acts on the internet. The attacker in Poway referenced the recent mosque attack in Christchurch, New Zealand, and we remain concerned in the online sharing of live stream. It could amplify viewer reaction to attacks and provide ideological and tactical inspiration to other domestic terrorists in the homeland. Now, let me read to you why this is so important. Accelerationists. There is an amazing article written by Vox on November 18th, 2019, specifically about accelerationism. And here are some things for you to consider. The dedication to violence in accelerationist space is scary. They openly fantasize about the need to kill Jews and non-whites and even celebrate ideologically opposed acts of violence like Islamic terrorist attacks as a blow against the system. This is domestic terrorists applauding other terrorists. Though violence is celebrated as the preemptive tactic, they are willing to endorse nonviolent means as well. Accelerationists have proposed distributing flyers for racist rallies alongside ones for counter rallies to stoke social division and create conflict. They suggest you should always vote for the most radical candidate in any election, regardless of their position on the political spectrum, to undermine the system's coherence. In their view, any sort of increase in social tension is good as long as it accelerates us towards a system collapse, and individuals have an obligation to do what they can to hasten us along this path. Let's talk about why this is important for 2 minutes, because that's all I have. So the Christchurch shooter, Brenton Tarrant, he is a white supremacist, and he actually wrote a manifesto, and one of the sections of his manifesto was called Destabilization and Accelerationism, Tactics for Victory. Why did you carry out the attack? To add momentum of the pendulum swings of history, further destabilizing and polarizing Western society in order to eventually destroy the current nihilistic, hedonistic, individualistic insanity that has taken control of Western thought. The change we need to enact only arises in the great crucible of crisis. The Poway church shooter cited that as his inspiration, and he used a gun for the same reasons as the Christchurch shooter. The goal is for the U.S. government to start confiscating guns. People will defend their right to own a firearm. Civil war has just started. If you want to know who's causing violence, you should already be able to draw your conclusions. As always, guys, this has been War Beauty. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, Ellie, educate, liberate, inspire, and empower. We can reform. We can make changes. We can make the world a better place. But it starts with Ellie. I love you guys, and I will see you next week. Peace.